Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Childcare costs can eat up to 20% of some families' incomes, and yet the true cost of caring for our children is much higher. Caregivers, for their part, rarely are paid a living wage, and many providers remain on the edge of viability. This has become a large drag on the American workforce as people leave their careers because it's just too expensive to pay for people to take care of young kids. And in this country's patriarchal system, women's work lives are often the ones that suffer. It won't surprise you to learn that the pandemic widened the cracks in our patched-together system, nor that other countries do this all better. We'll talk about our broken caregiving system and how we might fix it. That's all coming up next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. There's some brutal math to childcare here in America. What's it take to live in our region? There are different ways to calculate a living wage, but let's call it roughly $30 an hour in the Bay Area. To hire someone at that wage, it costs you more than $60,000 a year, and still that caregiver would not be making out. Of course, most people put their kids into care situations that are not one-to-one, yet they still pay more than $1,000 a month, and caregivers still make a fraction of a living wage. One report found that a single parent with two children would need to make $74 an hour to pay for basic expenses. And for many families, the single biggest line item in their budget is childcare. All this to say, parents and caregivers face intertwined but different dilemmas. Care is both too expensive and it doesn't pay enough. So what do we do? Here to discuss the particulars, we're joined by Daisy Nguyen, early childhood education and care reporter here at KQED. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
We're also joined by Deo Agustin, founder and owner of the Mind Builder Center, a licensed in-home childcare center in San Jose. Welcome, Deo.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Daisy, so we're kind of talking about the way that childcare both is expensive and hard to find. Why'd you decide to do a series on this, like, right now?
excuse me. Well, I think what we've seen is that during the pandemic, childcare emerged as an issue. Childcare workers became seen as these essential workers behind the essential workers, right? They were keeping their doors open and risking their own health so that other essential workers would be able to keep going to work. But since that time, the childcare system has really struggled to recover. Parents are facing ever longer wait lists, and the providers are stretched thin. A lot of that, I think, has to do with this low salaries that are making it hard for childcare workers to stay in the profession. This legislative year, lawmakers in Sacramento are really paying attention to this issue. They're recognizing that if we don't do something to stabilize the childcare industry, the economy will be affected because without childcare, parents, especially mothers, aren't able to go back to work.
Didn't a lot of childcare centers close down during the pandemic?
They did, and some of them closed permanently. Others were able to reopen because they received a lot of federal pandemic aid. Mm. But that aid is starting to dry up. A lot of pandemic-era policies that were also made the work a little bit easier for them, that's also about to end. Mm. So I think we're facing a cliff right now, you know, this coming year.
Gosh, so many things like this. We would love to hear from you. Have you struggled to find quality childcare at a price that you can afford? What's your experience been like? You can give us a call, 866-733-6786. Like, how are you dealing with this childcare dilemma? The number is 866-733-6786. You can email your story to forum@kqed.org, or you can find us on any of the social platforms where KQED Forum. Deo, I wanted to ask you about your work as a childcare provider. How did you get going in this business?
Well, actually, for me, it's an accident. During the recession back in 2008, I was laid off from the tech industry. And at the same time, I have a 2-year-old at the time. And so I was thinking, what can I do? What business can I put up that would help me as a mom? Because the rate at the time for childcare was already high. And so my mom and I formulated this business and we said, yeah, let's put up a childcare home. And because she had a childcare home at Victorville. And so I said, okay, help me out for a year. And so she did. And here we are after 15 years.
Wow. So what are the biggest challenges for you in sort of keeping the doors open?
The biggest challenge right now really is the rate, the regional market rate right now.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. So the child care provider union, CCPU, has won the negotiation regarding the rate back in 2022. So we have the increase, but it's based on 2018 data. Yeah. And as you know, the rate, we were already struggling. We have a child care crisis in our country before the pandemic. Imagine after the pandemic, our rate is still based on 2018. Everything went up. Yeah, except for the rate. And so California, or I mean, for the whole country, we have a goal of to provide an accessible, high quality childcare. And for us to sustain that, we have to be able to provide individualized care, right, for the children, especially for the infants.
Yeah, 6 week olds and 2 months old, right?
Yeah, we're taking care of 0 to 5, and high quality means you have to have people, you have to have staff providing care with you. Just an example here in San Jose, minimum rate right now is $17, and we have to hire highly trained teachers. And right now, the rate is $20 and up. $20 is not even, you know, fair for my staff if I pay them that rate. But that's to be able to be high quality.
Yeah,
we have to give the care and the people, the staff, the ratio has to be low.
Right, right.
And so right now, if you calculate it, it's $5 an hour. The regional market rate that we're getting is $5 an hour. How are we going to support the staff? We not only need one staff, at least two, if you have 14 children, because you have to go back and forth, picking up school-age kids. Yeah.
And by that, you mean you get paid $5 per hour per kid from the state?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Dale, this topic breaks my heart. It's such a tough topic. I want to get to one of our callers. We've got Allison in Richmond, who's on sort of the other side of this broken market trying to find childcare. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. I called right away when I heard about this topic. And I'm going to try to even tell it without crying so much. I was a pandemic layoff. I had a job full time. Right after I had my baby, I was laid off. So I found myself unemployed at first. And so I've been self-employed actually since then. And so I've been kind of in this like toggle to get back to full-time employment. And basically my first son, I went through 4 daycares in a year, and he was already a year old at that point. And I went through them in this shocking way. So the first one There was such a lack of care, and so we were like, oh, we can do better, and this, mm-hmm. and so not much story there. But what happened next got really interesting. One day I texted my this is my second daycare, and I texted mm-hmm. them, and I was like, hey, I noticed you're having, you know, you're really doing a good job of feeding my son, and I'm struggling. I can't get my toddler to eat food. Mm-hmm. And I asked them for tips on how to feed him. Yeah. And she responded and she said, you don't seem happy here. Don't come back.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm not kidding. Oh. Okay, if you bear with me, I'm going to tell you just really quickly what happened after that. Because then I went to another daycare that we found through Craigslist. And it was a mother whose son helped her a lot. And the son took my little son to the park regularly.
Yeah.
And one day he texted me and he's like, oh, by the way, I moved to St. Louis. And I, at that point, was very traumatized by the previous experience. And yeah. I said, oh, who's going to take Quinn to my son to the park? And he said, you don't seem happy here. Don't come back. I mean, in so many words, like, he seemed really tipped off that I noticed that no one was taking my son to the park because he suddenly moved. Anyway,
Allison.
And then, yeah, and lastly, I wanted to say that it's also been a really difficult sick year, and we've had a lot of struggles around daycare with the sick year. I think everyone knows that by now. It's been a pretty communal and shared experience. And my daycare provider, when I inquired a lot about improving our sick policies, actually told me to leave again. And
it's so hard. I know, Allison, you know, been through this with my own children and all the kids around me. And it is just, I think it's just so hard because on one side, we're hearing, you know, Deo has a hard time keeping people. They're not being paid enough. And on the other side, it's so hard to find care, particularly if you have to go back in and find it, you know, again and again and again. I mean, I my heart goes out to you. It's so, so hard. And, you know, leaving the kid at a new place each time is so difficult. This is why we're doing the show. We're talking about why child care is so expensive, how we could bring down the costs, how we could make it more accessible for people at all income levels. We're joined by Daisy Nguyen, early childhood education and care reporter with KQED. Deo Agustin, founder and owner of Mind Builder Center, a licensed in-home child care center in San Jose. We're going to get to some of the political and policy solutions, but man, you can hear this is a really, really tough topic on all the sides. Have you struggled to find quality child care at an affordable price like Allison? What's your experience been? We'd love to hear from you. And if you're a child care provider, how are you managing to stay afloat financially and to find families? You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. The email is forum@kqed.org. You can try us on all the social things. We're KQED Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more. We'll get to some solutions, I promise, right after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about why child care is so expensive and how to bring down the cost while also supporting people working in the industry. Joined by Daisy Nguyen, early childhood education and care reporter with KQED. Deo Agustin is the founder and owner of Mind Builder Center. Deo, I know you have to get back to working with the kids, but I was just hoping maybe you could respond to Allison and Richmond, who has been having trouble finding really like dependable care, like what are some tips that you might have for someone who's in her situation to find the kind of childcare center where maybe she could find a more sustainable solution?
Yeah. First of all, Allison, I'm so sorry that you're going through that. It's really tough. I am a mother too, and I have gone through that too. I mean, I cannot believe that this programs have, turned their backs on you and your child. But there are other quality childcare there that you can find. And don't lose hope, because like me, pursuing and always attaining high quality care, they're there for you. Mm-hmm. If you need help, I'm pretty sure in your area you have help from the government, like referral. You can always call them, resource and referral. Mm-hmm. Also, you can call some of the networks that are already established there. And I'm pretty sure that they have vetted a family childcare home around your place. But your experience is very unacceptable. We are here to serve the children and not ourselves. I mean, first of all, we have to have the love for the children and to serve the families of our community. And that does not reflect that at all. So you deserve more than that. And I would pray that you'll find the best place for your children and your family. You will find them. Just be patient.
Thank you so much, Deo Agustin, founder and owner of Mind Builder Center in San Jose. Really appreciate your joining us this morning.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Want to add a couple other voices into our conversation. We have Anna Powell, who's a senior research and policy associate for the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment, which is part of the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment at UC Berkeley. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you. Good morning.
We are also joined by Senator Monique Limon, California State Senator. She represents the 19th Senate District, which includes Santa Barbara County and over half of Ventura County. She's been deeply engaged on these issues. Thanks so much for joining us, Senator Limon.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
Let's start with you, Senator. From your position, what should the state be doing here? Because what we're describing is a horribly broken market where it's both too expensive and people don't get paid enough.
Absolutely. And I will say that this is not just a policy issue. As a mother of a toddler, certainly I've experienced some of what's been shared. And I think that the state has multiple roles to play. One, we really need to look at the subsidized care and what subsidies we're able to provide for individuals who most need it. And I think secondly, we really do also have a role to play when it comes to understanding what the unmet needs are, whether they're subsidized or unsubsidized. So as it relates to family fees, as it relates to different kind of types of care, multimodal care, all of these things are issues that really the state has and should be playing a greater role. One of the challenges we've seen at the state level is certainly the funding issues. Mm-hmm. The funding issues have been probably one of the biggest barriers and obstacles to us being able to realize a system of care in 58 different counties. I think one of the challenges we see is that the level of care, how much care is available, varies from county to county. Rural areas certainly experience some of the hardest challenges in terms of being able to have these care centers. And we know that that has impacts on the children. So that is, I think, one of the biggest issues we see from a policy perspective. But I will tell you again, as a mother of a toddler, I absolutely understand the everyday challenges and frustrations. I myself was on a wait list for 11 months before getting in, and piecing together care is so difficult. It is unbelievably difficult, and it certainly impacts, the everyday worker. And that's millions of parents in our country who are impacted by this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's bring in caller Rob in San Francisco. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you. First of all, our son is 18 now, so I'm a few years out of the childcare search, but I do remember how stressful it was, not only the financial side of it, but just finding somebody that you feel you can trust to really mm-hmm. take care of your kid, and that your kid will be happy and not stressed out and not come home traumatized. Mm-hmm. So it's tough. But my question is this model unsustainable without subsidies? Because like you said, the child care providers feel like they need to charge more to be able to pay their workers enough to make it so you can find quality people that will do the job for a decent wage. But at the same time, it's overly expensive for parents. So how does this model even work in a yeah. sustainable way without public subsidies? Or is that just the way it has to be and that an unsubsidized childcare system can't function?
Yeah, it is a really interesting question. Thank you so much for that, Rob. Anna Powell, I mean, this is kind of your bread and butter here. Talk to us about the kind of realities of what really is this kind of gap between what a lot of parents can pay and what workers need to live.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for having me on this morning. I would say that question couldn't have teed up the conversation any better. Effectively, that gets right to the core of the issue. The early care and education system, California and the United States more broadly, really needs public investment in order to get out of this trap that we're in right now, where parents already pay more than they can afford and early educators can't make a living on the salaries that they have. And our fellow countries in the developed world, they have moved away from this structure of largely relying on private pay to fund childcare. Mm. They are turning to early education and seeing it as a public good. And they're putting investment in it the way they do for older children.
Anna, you know, one of our listeners tweets, part of Biden's original Build Back Better included childcare funding. It was called, quote, soft infrastructure, like it's unimportant versus hard projects. Of course, this was going too far for conservatives. Pat Buchanan ended Nixon's national childcare proposal. Only when the business class pushes politicians for childcare infrastructure will something happen. Is the answer here really because of, you know, Senator Limon was saying earlier that they're having funding issues at the state level? Does that mean that basically we need federal level funding mechanisms for this?
That's a great question. So in many cases, the ultimate solution may need to come from the federal government for us to achieve perhaps the level of universal coverage that we would need. That's because, for example, in the Build Back Better proposal, which aimed to cap family expenses at 7% of the household income, that would have created this pot of money, which would have been distributed out to states. Right now, a lot of the subsidy dollars that California distributes actually do come from the federal government originally. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we put our own money in there as well. But it is a substantial amount of money that would be required to spread those subsidies to effectively become a universal system.
Let's bring in another caller struggling with stuff. Teresa in Concord. Welcome.
Hi. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Okay, awesome. So I was a full-time working mom. My kids are now 9 and 6. And then the pandemic happened, and my son, my oldest, was midway through kindergarten. So I just decided to quit and stay home. And I mean, we had been through many daycares ever since the kids were like 3 months old.
Yeah.
And it was just like a big shift in our world to be like at home, home mom. Mm. Totally weird for me. But I found, you know, through the benefits, unemployment benefits, it was really good. Mm-hmm. But then now, 2023, I've decided that blessed at the moment where I can step back and not have to go right back to work. Mm. And another part of that was my paychecks. What I made around $60,000. Mm-hmm. All of it was going to childcare, right, minus maybe $800 a month. So
right. You were like paying not to spend time with your kids.
Sense.
Yeah, right.
Right. It just didn't make sense to go back to work at that point to, yeah, exactly. So I'm encouraging other working moms, if they can take a step back and take a break, if it's at all possible for them to try it. You know, it's definitely a huge adjustment on your budget and and everything, but I definitely recommend it.
And are you thinking about, are you thinking that eventually you'll get the kids to school and then you'll re-enter the workforce? Is that how you're thinking right now?
Yeah. Yes. And that's horrifying because you hear all the stories about women trying to go back into the workforce. Mm-hmm. I didn't ever have a real career, so I feel more flexible. Like I can do different things, but it's definitely hard. You know, you worry about your 401k, retirement. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just insane. Yeah. So it's basically me just being in the moment right now.
Hey, Teresa, thank you so much for calling us and sharing your story. Here is someone on the other end of the shoot. Sue writes in to say, maybe our society needs to change its priorities about parental roles and child rearing. It's the most important work we can do, and so a parent can stay home while children are young. I was a software engineer in Silicon Valley many years ago when my oldest daughter was born. I went to halftime and quit altogether when she was 18 months old. I was a hardworking stay-at-home mom for almost 20 years. When my youngest child entered middle school, I went back to work part-time and have had another 25 good years in the workforce. I had no ambitions for higher management or glory in the workplace. I've never regretted my decision. There's a lot to be said for the, quote, mommy track, including also making that a daddy track, I think. You know, Senator Limon, I wanted to come back to you on some of the other things that we heard earlier in the show. Child care provider Deo Augustine was asking about the regional market rate, the sort of subsidy that the state is providing, and was saying that she felt like it needed to go up to keep up at least with the sort of pace of inflation because it's based on 2018 cost data. Can you talk a little bit about how you think about adjusting that rate and whether that's a possibility?
Absolutely. I feel like one of the things that our state has been working on is what we call rate reform, right? And being able to increase the amount of subsidies that we are able to provide, knowing that that will have an impact on how others are paid. And so certainly, I think from region to region, it is different in our state of California. However, the need is there. And we believe that rate reform is one of the things that will help us get there. And so this has to do more with the workers, the individuals that we are able to pay, because that then drives up. I think being able to move the salaries of the individuals who get paid higher and being able to help with some of these subsidies at the state level then means that the whole system has a greater investment. So that is one of the things that we are certainly aware of. It is, you know, I have a bill on this at this moment that we're trying to drive some of this up. And it does mean, you know, again, greater investment. And I think to some of the comments that have been made, like, when is the time that, you know, we're going to revamp and reimagine our system, both at the state and federal level, to ensure that we can provide care? You know, this is not any different to how we think about the K-12 system, right? There's really great investments. And so made at the K-12 system by states and the federal government. But we don't have, that doesn't necessarily translate to 0 to 5. And I will say that you are, I think the pandemic did raise the question of childcare for a lot of businesses in our state and in our country, where they were realizing that the workforce was not able to go to work. You don't have employees if you don't have care. Mm-hmm. And so many economists told us there's two things that need to happen for an economy to start working again, is you need to open schools and you need to have childcare. And so that speaks to a greater understanding of what would an overall investment look like if we treated 0 to 5 like we treat K-12 in terms of our investments, right? Not, they're not identical. We are not going to do this the same thing. But if we treated them together, you know, in a similar way, would we then have a very different childcare system? And I believe the answer is yes.
Yeah. Daisy Nguyen with KQED. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other reporting that you've been able to do, particularly about the way that sort of providers in places like, say, Stockton or some of the smaller cities are struggling to be able to sort of provide the kind of care that they want to?
Yeah, one of my for one of my stories, I did go to Stockton in the northern part of the town because it was considered like a childcare desert. There's just not many of them left, and yet there's plenty of demand, especially among lower income families, working class families who depend on having reliable childcare so they can get to work. And these are people who sometimes get up super early in the morning because they're commuting to the Bay Area for jobs. So these are the kind of providers who work really long hours, and they depend on these rates because they're providing for families who qualify for the subsidies. Mm-hmm. And they're just not, you know, the value of these rates just don't match up to what it costs to care for children. And it's, you know, these are mostly, I went to the home of Annette Nicholson, who has been caring for children out of her home for the last 15 years or so. And, you know, she's got to pay for her mortgage. She's paying for food, which she, you know, because she's providing fresh meals for the children that she cares for. There's insurance. There's also, you know, she's got to have an extra helper because she has to meet really strict state regulations when it comes to the ratio of adults per child. And it depends. It's even, you know, more strict the younger the children are because they require more supervision. These are expenses that I think are not being accounted for when the state is reimbursing providers like Annette for the care that she provides. And then she, you know, she's 62. She doesn't really have much of a savings account for retirement. She hardly has health insurance. You know, so she's part of a union called Child Care Providers United, and they're fighting for these changes because they're really, you know, barely hanging in there.
Yeah. You know, another listener writes in to say, like everything else in the Bay Area, a big part of the cost here is the cost of housing. We need to build until everyone can afford a home and stop thinking that rising home values are good for society. If the child care professionals' housing costs go down and the parents who need their services have their housing costs go down, then the two sides of the market gap might be able to meet in the middle. And boy, I will say this is some of this conversation is so familiar from talking about schools, because teachers, of course, are maybe paid a little better, but also experience many of these same struggles of finding a place to live in the Bay Area. We are talking about why childcare is so expensive and how to bring costs down while also trying to make life better for the people who take care of our children. Have you struggled to find quality childcare at an affordable price? What's your experience been like? And give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786, or you can try the email. It's forum@kqed.org. We're joined this morning by Daisy Nguyen, early childhood education and care reporter with KQED, Anna Powell, senior research and policy associate with the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment, which is part of the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment at the University of California, Berkeley. Also joined by Senator Monique Limon, representing the 19th District, which is parts of Santa Barbara and half of Ventura County. She's been deeply involved on these issues. Earlier, we were joined by Deo Agustin, founder and owner of the Mind Builder Center Childcare in San Jose. We'll be back with more right after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about childcare. So expensive, and yet also our caregivers are not paid well. We're joined by Daisy Nguyen, early childhood education and care reporter with KQED, who's been working on a series on this issue, Anna Powell, senior research and policy associate with the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at Berkeley, and Senator Monique Limon, representing the 19th district. I want to get in some more callers. Rebecca in Richmond, welcome.
Hey. So I wanted to share the experience that I've had with my family trying to work out the sort of patchwork of care. Like a previous caller we had, I was making about $60,000 a year when my son was born, and we did the math and figured we were going to have more as well. And it just, we were going to be paying to, my entire paycheck was just going to basically go to childcare. So I stayed home for 6 years. And then my husband's work stopped covering as much healthcare as they had been covering. And we were looking at just a huge, huge healthcare bill, and really kind of stuck. So what we've ended up doing is I'm actually on my way home from work right now. I got up at 1:30 this morning, and every morning I go to work for the sunrise shift, supervising package handlers. And it's a good job. I like it. It's been a huge adjustment for our family because I have to go to bed at 7:30 when our kids go to bed. And I get home. My youngest is still only in part-time preschool. So some mornings he's at home sort of on an iPad. My husband works from home, and there's like a half hour overlap where
you can say hello to each other.
Yeah. And my 3-year-old is sort of just in the background of my husband's Zoom calls until I can sort of tap in. And that's how we've made it work. And it's actually working better than I had anticipated it was going to.
Dang, but not all heroes wear capes. My God. Some of them work the sunrise shift. Wow. I mean, are you... Yeah. Like, do you think this is sustainable for you, like, over how long, you think?
I could see myself honestly doing this for a really long time now that I've gotten used to going to bed really early. Mm-hmm. It's not as bad as it sounds like it is, but it's, I'm not going to say it's great, but it's really nice being done with work by 10 a.m. like, and being able to pick my kids up from school, but I would really rather this wasn't what I was having to do. Yeah. But it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Wow. Well, Rebecca, man, that is a solution. It would be nice if you could, you know, see your family. Thanks so much for sharing that experience with us. Let's go straight to Cole in Mountain View. Hey, Cole, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for adding it earlier when they were talking about the mommy track. And, you know, but adding to that the daddy track, I think that's really important. And this is a really great opportunity for dads to start stepping up. But I wanted to sort of add my story similar to the last caller. I was the primary breadwinner for a while in my family. Now my wife is. But even as such, we're having to still patchwork and juggle our care. We have an amazing care provider who we get for 4 days a week. But as it is, most of my paycheck goes to her. And we've noticed trying several daycares and things that it seems to be an economy of scale issue, that as fewer and fewer people seem to use group care and go to private care or individuals, it seems like they're having a harder and harder time sustaining these larger care facilities. Mm. And it just feels like it's a snowball effect. And it really feels like we need something to help boost the resources of those facilities.
Yeah. Yeah, Cole, that's such a good point. Thank you so much, and appreciate having some dads call into the show as well. Daisy, can you talk to me a little bit about the different kinds of facilities? And if we know anything from research about kind of, or your reporting about what's working better?
I mean, generally there are two kinds of facilities, right? You could either send your kid to like a home-based setting like the one I just described in Stockton, which is generally called family child care. Or you can go to a larger center that can accommodate more children because they have more staff and space. Care for infants and toddlers tend to cost more than for older preschool age kids because they need more adult supervision. And frankly, it's just a labor intensive job. The hours are long, and workers, these workers are just have been among the lowest paid workers in the workforce. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they haven't rebounded to pre-pandemic levels in comparison to other job sectors is just because their pay is so low. A lot of childcare providers have talked to me about seeing employees leave, quit for jobs, you know, at Costco or Target where mm-hmm. they have better wages and benefits. And so there's just this high turnover rate, which probably leads to some of the instability that we've been hearing from the callers. Mm-hmm. It's really causing this ripple effect in our economy. I think some of the solutions we heard from Senator Limón would help, you know, improve some of the rates so that it'll stabilize the system a little bit, making the job a little bit more appealing, so mm-hmm. that we can get more early educators into the field. You know, giving them the wages and respect they deserve, you know, and making it a real profession. In San Francisco, we're starting to see some of those ideas being implemented through a local tax initiative called Baby Prop C. Mm-hmm. It was something that voters in the city had passed back in 2018, and it's to raise the taxes for warehouses and commercial rental properties, mm-hmm. and using that money to fund the early childcare field. But that money was put on hold for a couple of years because of litigation. And just starting last summer, it started to become implemented where teachers, the early educators, were starting to receive stipends, like bonuses to you know, to keep them in their jobs. And more families started getting access, because in San Francisco, a family of four making about $150,000 a year can qualify for subsidized childcare, which is vastly higher than, you know, what the rest of the state, families in the rest of California can qualify for. Yeah. And so, you know, the city's goal is to pay early educators a minimum wage of $28 per hour, which is considered a living wage. Mm-hmm. And it's getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Anna, I was wondering if that Baby Prop C had been copied by any other places in the state, or whether you were seeing, you know, similar kinds of efforts at the very local level.
Absolutely. Well, San Francisco is certainly leading our state, and Alameda County and Oakland have both been in the works of creating some local funds that voters have approved, but those are in an early state. We largely have to look outside of California for other examples. So I'll give you the state of New Mexico, for example, which has passed a new measure just in the past couple years to set aside a new funding source, which will go exclusively to childcare. And in this, they are also doing those two things. One, of raising the rate that the state will pay for that subsidy per child, but also trying to expand the number of families eligible to participate in that system, with the goal of reaching more and more saturation over time. So that's what New Mexico and San Francisco are both doing well. But it's worth pointing out the $28 per hour would be a living wage for a single adult with no children. And as we've talked about, you know, many educators like Deo have children of their own, and they would likely need to earn somewhere in the area of early $40 to $45 per hour in order to be making a living wage and have children of their own. And that's what folks who teach in K-12 are typically earning. So the long-term goal to stabilize and honor our field is to see what we call pay parity, so where the wages in pre-K or early care and education align with those in public schools.
A few more listener comments I want to get to, and Senator Limón, I'm coming to you right after them. One listener writes, you know, I called my mother and begged her to relocate to California, move in with me and help with childcare. I couldn't find anything that was both decent and affordable in the Bay Area. California doesn't spend enough on children, which is why California kids end up underperforming academically and otherwise. If we invest in kids early, we won't need to invest in prisons later. Everything from daycare to early and elementary education should be receiving more from the funding pie. You know, Beth writes in to say, I find it distressing to hear accolades for the mommy track as an alternative to quality childcare at an affordable price. When women leave the workforce, they fall behind economically and career-wise and are likely to never catch up. This is an age-old trap that ultimately feeds the myth that child-bearing age women are not worth the investment and that the proper place for women is in the home. Ryan writes in to say, sometimes my husband and I, parents of a 3.5-year-old and an infant, fantasize about moving to France for these early childhood years. After college, I taught in a primary school in Brittany, and in the same school, there were always little tots toddling around as well because France has a free public preschool system. Children over the age of 2 who are potty trained can go to a center for free. It's all taxpayer funded. As with most social programs, it's always depressing to realize that the United States is so woefully behind other developed nations, to the point that we take for granted that publicly funded programs like this aren't even conceivable within our political landscape. As a result, parents like myself have to simply pay out of pocket a sum equivalent to half our net income. So, Senator Lamone, here's a question. Is there the political will, either in the state of California or broader, to try and change this system? Like, this does seem like it's pretty broken the way we're doing it. We see other places that seem to be doing it better. How possible is movement on this topic?
Well, I will say that I think that it needs to be aligned with both the federal and the state. The state has invested in nearly 200,000 more additional childcare spots for our state. Additionally, the Legislative Women's Caucus, which is bipartisan, has pushed to make a nearly $1 billion investment. But that alone doesn't take us there. It takes, what it does is it helps for a number of, for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, for a shorter period of time. It doesn't solve our long-term problem. And I think that it is going to be critical that when we see 0 to 5 as something that should have the investments of K through 12, and we see some of this pay parity, you will see it increase. This year, I'm carrying a bill that's really also moving from the business side. They would like to see child tax credits, since this state is a state where there is such high cost housing. There's more businesses now who say, if we can't offer housing, can we offer childcare as an incentive to retain and attract the best employees? And so these are real conversations, and these are forcing change. I do not think that the change is happening fast enough. I think of myself in everything that everyone has been talking about, piecing together care, running around. What do you do when, your childcare center, when you finally get in and your childcare center closes? What do you, having the conversations as a family, does it make sense to still have someone who is working full time when you're paying out for this care? All of those pieces have to come together. And there has to be, I think, a collective effort at the federal level and at the state level. It has to be bipartisan to say we want to change this and we want to change this for good. I do feel that we are making strides, but I do not think that we are going to make them fast enough or soon enough. Many of us on this call will have kids. By the time we see the change we want, we will probably have kids in the K through 12 system already, right? And we will have aged out of the 0 to 5. But I think it's so important to have the lessons of the 0 to 5, all of these things that so many callers have shared, to be part of the reality that influences what that change looks like. And also, for us, not to stop asking for these changes, whether or not we have kids 0 to 5, we all need allies, right? It shouldn't just be the individuals who have kids in the 0 to 5 age range who are asking for this. It has to be a collective recognition that the system needs investments at multiple level, right? From private, from public. We need to prioritize this, just as the business so often asks for tax credit, so often asks, for elements that help their business. This needs to be part of the equation for families and for their employees.
Yeah. I want to make sure we get to Noemi in San Jose. You have a tip for some folks who are in Santa Clara County.
Yes. Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you to everyone who's contributed to this conversation. I was referred to a website called childcaresbc.org. It's a tool through Santa Clara County. It's basically a database of licensed in-home daycares as well as childcare facilities. And I was cold calling places trying to find childcare for my son. And although I didn't end up finding one through that tool, I've been sharing it with folks that, you know, I randomly meet at Trader Joe's or what have you, right, that talk about finding childcare being so difficult. And, you know, aside from pay parity and some of the other recommendations, I'm wondering if there's also been discussions about a statewide tool where anyone can look for licensed in-home facilities or childcare centers. I think it's something that is needed and maybe is a little more of a low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Thank
Anna
you.
Powell, thank you so much, Noemi. Really appreciate that. Anna Powell, have you heard of anything along those lines?
Yes. Fortunately, there is a website as well as, I believe, a hotline that you can use. I'm just trying to remind myself the website right now. Yeah. I'll get that shortly.
Yeah, it's not
Go
coming
ahead,
up to my, yeah. my mind right now, but it's compiled by a network of resource and referral centers throughout California. Each county has one, and they're contracted by the state to refer families to providers who happen to have an opening. And match the family and their needs to the provider.
Got it. So we will try.
I got it right here.
Okay,
it is mychildcareplan.org. Mychildcareplan.org.
I have to say, mychildcareplan.org needs a little better SEO. I think we were all Googling at the same time.
Yeah.
last comment. Jennifer writes in to say, I had two children who needed after-school care when the pandemic hit, but just months before 2020, we had to disenroll because it was too expensive and we were falling too far behind. I ended up bending over backwards and asking my workplace to be flexible with me and letting me come in later so I could get the kids to school and then work from home later in the day so I could pick them up. It was a lot, and then the pandemic hit, where the world seemed to have gone to work from home. It was a silver lining in the horror that is the pandemic. My workplace never went back to the office, and we're permanently work from home, and it's been the best for our family. Another story of the way that people are just having to make it work because childcare is expensive. We've been talking about how to bring down those costs while trying to make the working lives of caregivers better, the people taking care of our kids. We've been joined by Daisy Nguyen, early childhood education and care reporter with KQED, Anna Powell, senior research and policy associate with the Center for the Study of Child Care Employment. Senator Monique Limon in the California State Senate, she represents the 19th district down there in Southern California. Earlier, we were joined by Deo Agustin, founder and owner of the Mind Builder Center, a licensed in-home child care center in San Jose. Allison Richmond, I'm still thinking about you. If you're still listening, I hope you've heard. You're not alone. There's at least that. You've been listening to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Rachel Miro.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.